heading north. Get your gear on and stand by to move out. We shouldered our loads and began moving slowly out of the thick swamp. As I passed a shallow foxhole where Robert B. Oswalt had been dug in, I asked a man nearby if the word were true about Oswalt being killed. Sadly, he said yes. Oswalt had been fatally wounded in the head. A bright young mind that aspired to delve into the mysteries of the human brain to alleviate human suffering had itself been destroyed by a tiny chunk of metal. What a waste, I thought. War is such self-defeating, organized madness, the way it destroys a nation's best. I wondered also about the hopes and aspirations of a dead Japanese we had just dragged out of the water. But those of us caught up in the maelstrom of combat had little compassion for the enemy. As a wise, salty NCO had put it one day on Pavuvu, when asked by a replacement if he ever felt sorry for the Japanese when they got hit, "Hell no, it's them or us." We moved out, keeping our 5-pace interval, through the thick swamp toward the sound of heavy firing. The heat was almost unbearable, and we were halted frequently to prevent heat prostration in the 115-degree temperature. We came to the eastern edge of the airfield and halted in the shade of a scrub thicket. Throwing down our gear, we fell on the deck, sweating, panting, exhausted. I had no more than reached for a canteen when a rifle bullet snapped overhead. "He's close. Get down," said an officer. The rifle cracked again. "Sounds like he's right through there a little way," the officer said. "I'll get him," said Howard Neese. "Okay, go ahead, but watch yourself." Neese, a Gloucester veteran, grabbed his rifle and took off into the scrub with the nonchalance of a hunter going after a rabbit in a bush. He angled to one side so as to steal up on the sniper from the rear. We waited a few anxious moments, then heard 2 M1 shots. "Old Howard got him," confidently remarked one of the men. Soon Howard reappeared wearing a triumphant grin and carrying a Japanese rifle and some personal effects. Everyone congratulated him on his skill, and he reacted with his usual modesty. "Rack 'em up, boys," he laughed. We moved out in a few minutes through some knee-high bushes onto the open area at the edge of the airfield. The heat was terrific. When we halted again, we lay under the meager shade of the bushes. I held up each foot and let the sweat pour out of my boondockers. A man on the crew of the other weapon in our mortar section passed out. He was a Gloucester veteran, but Peleliu's heat proved too much for him. We evacuated him. But unlike some heat prostration cases, he never returned to the company. Some men pulled the rear border of their camouflaged helmet cover out from between the steel and the liner, so the cloth hung down over the backs of their necks. This gave them some protection against the blistering sun, but they looked like the French Foreign Legion in a desert. After a brief rest, we continued in dispersed order. We could see Bloody Nose Ridge to our left front. Northward from that particular area, 2nd Battalion 1st Marines, 2-1, was fighting desperately against Japanese hidden in well-protected caves. We were moving up to relieve 1st Battalion 5th Marines, 1-5, and would tie in with the 1st Marines. Then we were to attack northward along the eastern side of the ridges.